2 months ago, Eau Claire Middle School teacher Ron Martin was elected president of WEAC. That's the Wisconsin Association Education Council. It's Wisconsin's largest teachers union. He becomes president on August 1, so it's a great time for a newsmaker's interview with Ron Martin. Ron, welcome to Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Give me, 5 years after Act 10, a little bit of your State of WEAC speech. How is the state's largest teachers union doing?
Well, it's no secret we were under attack. They went after us, and we just have really refocused and put our energies in reclaiming the profession and having an opportunity to work with our members all across the state to make sure that every kid has a great public education and that we work with our members who are in, like you said, every corner of the state, mm-hmm. the largest union in the state. So we're really redefining who we are and really making great strides moving forward. It's an exciting time, I think, and that's one of the reasons why I ran for WEAC president.
Do you think that Act 10 hurt WEAC more than any other public employee union, sir?
Well, I haven't really had a chance to do an analysis of the other unions. I know what it did to us. It really made us rethink about who we are and what we do. It did hurt us. It did hurt us. They did exactly what they wanted to do. But the nice thing is that we have really decided that we're going to move forward with a very different message and working with our members on a one-to-one level.
Did you lose one-third, one-half of your members?
Our membership, we have the pre-K-12, higher ed, we have a support staff, and we have students. So we sit around about 50,000.
50,000 WEAC members,
right, yeah.
Now?
Yep, currently.
Can I ask what you had in 2011?
Off the top of my head, I can't think.
Okay.
I mean, we lost in gradual because as contracts as groups went off contracts, then we lost members based on that. So I can't give you the definitive on that number. And I wasn't real active or as engaged or involved in the state level, 6-7 years ago when we were probably at our highest numbers.
Do you think some members of WEAC who you lost, was it a matter of finances and they said, we're going to take what we're paying in dues and we have to, because of our family finances, we have to switch that from dues to paying more for our pensions and health care?
I think that was a contributing factor.
Okay.
So I think that was one of the reasons. There are several probably others that we've heard from members.
The changes to collective bargaining, is it true that it empowered some of our best teachers to go to different districts and they became independent kind of shoppers and they got offers to go to better districts, and has it generated a lot of movement among our public school teachers?
I don't have exact data on that, but I've heard some stories of individuals who have left certain, and I think our rural schools have been hit particularly hard, especially in hard-to-staff areas. And if people are kind of playing that trading game with individuals, particularly in tech ed, special ed, and this district's willing to pay a little bit more, this individual is looking at that as an opportunity, a career opportunity. And then there are just some districts that have worked collaboratively with their local teachers or their support staff, and that has kept the staff intact in some of the locals. So it's different in different parts of the state.
Well, you mentioned rural schools. Talk to me about the gap in educational programming in rural schools, suburban and urban. How wide a disparity is that, sir?
I think it's pretty significant. I grew up in a rural school way up in northern part of the state. I mean, I did receive a great public education, but I think there are huge differences. And as we take a look at the last two budgets that were passed in the state, mm-hmm. I think it hurt our rural schools. It hurt it more significantly than perhaps suburban. So I'm in more of a suburban in Eau Claire. While the budget did hurt Eau Claire, I think our rurals really got hit hard, particularly in areas like internet and technology. Mm-hmm. Being able to cut some of that was going to be able to reach some of our most rural schools, that really hurt.
And talk to me now. You've been a teacher for 23 years?
23 years.
And have you always been at your middle school in Eau Claire?
Always been at South Middle School. Yeah.
Well, what has Act 10 meant for your classroom in terms of tech capabilities or other capabilities? How has it changed it? Is your class size larger?
Yeah, class sizes, and we're not able to give the individual attention that we should give to some of the students that need that because our class sizes were just larger. Technology, adoption of curriculum, we're unable to provide the kind of resources that we were able to provide prior to Act 10. And some of that was coming out of our own pockets. We saw that it was so important to have these resources so that the kids in Eau Claire get the same education as kids in Columbus, Ohio, or in, you know, San Francisco or wherever. We want to make sure that our kids are competitive and that our kids get a, you know, the best education possible. So we would pull it out of our own pockets.
What has social media and the internet done to a classroom teacher like you? Now, you teach social studies?
Yep, eighth grade.
And eighth grade.
They love their cell phones.
They love their cell phones. Is that a big setback with you trying to teach in a classroom?
No, I think what it was...
What are the rules? You can't bring it into the classroom?
Well, they changed some of the rules with technology. Probably my last couple of years prior to becoming a WEAC officer, allowing kids to have their cell phones in class, and we were able to use that then advantageously to the kid so that they had direct internet access. They're able to take notes right on their phone. Mm-hmm. They could take pictures of a slide we might have up on the PowerPoint. So we just have to be able to use that, but the monitoring was the hard part, being able to make sure that they were all where they were supposed to be.
Right.
That was important to us.
When a Wisconsin public school teacher asks you, why should I join WEAC, what's your answer?
I have, you know, lots of answers for them. But
go
I
ahead,
guess
give a few.
The biggest answer is that we're a collective voice to bring back the respect that's so needed in the profession. It's an opportunity for us to collaborate and help advance the profession, to support you so that you can be the best educator that you want to be. And I think that, to me, is the biggest and the best answer.
And once you give that pitch, are you seeing an uptick in more teachers coming back to your union?
We are. We're starting to see, as we have those one-on-one conversations with educators all over the state, and we have an opportunity to sit and talk with them about who we are, what we do together. We're starting to see more and more people join the union or want to be a part of the union.
Well, let's go back to 2010 when Governor Walker was running for the first time. He generically referred to public employees as the haves and taxpayers as the have-nots. Mm-hmm. Is there still a resentment out there statewide of public employees, not just teachers, but public employees, or is that ebbing?
I think it's ebbing. I think it took some time. I think that there was a time period in all of American history where the financial just crashed. I mean, and people were really struggling. It was hard to make ends meet. And so it was easy to be able to put the blame on one particular group. And I think that that's one thing that Governor Walker has successfully done. He has divided our state. He has put people against each other, and I think that's been disastrous. And I think that's what we're seeing in some of the polling numbers. When we see that his polling numbers are so low, people are just tired of that divide and conquer. You know, we were a state that was unified. We were a state that really believed in democracy. We were a state that believed in public education. And I think we're starting to see a change.
Is that pendulum swinging back?
I think it is. And that's really what excites me. I would not have ran for WEAC president if I would have thought that this was all just done, we were all over. I ran because I knew there was an opportunity. I know that there's a future, and it's an exciting time.
What intrigues me, I think it was the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance did a study. A number of school district voters are passing referendums. Mm-hmm. What does that tell you as the president of WEAC?
Well, that's telling me that people really believe in their public schools, their community schools. It's important to them. It sets an identity. I grew up in a really small town, Minong. Northwood
okay.
School, and that was the heart of our community. If you take that away, Minong's pretty much nothing. That was really important. I mean, all the way to the senior citizens, to the very young. Friday Night Football was incredibly important. It brought everybody in the community together. So when the Evergreens were playing, you know, Solon Springs Eagles, you know, everyone was there.
What's happened then to the Minong School District now, X number of years later since you left it? Has it been merged? I mean, are teams...
Well, it was merged to begin with, but they did build a new school since I left it.
They did.
But they've had to make some significant cuts. My niece just graduated. So 30 years ago, I graduated, and then she graduated this year. So it was kind of exciting. You know, we're on the same kind of track. And she's really into music, and they cut the vocal music program. But it didn't stop her because she just was accepted into the women's chorus at UW-Eau Claire as a freshman. So she's pretty excited. But those are the kind of things that happen, and it hurts some of the kids. It really does.
Well, let me ask you this. Has WEAC's lobbying strategy changed? Here's why I ask. I looked it up in the 2011-2012 session, the Act 10 session. Mm-hmm. WEAC had 12 lobbyists. I looked up the last session. You had three. Has your lobbying strategy changed?
It really has. I mean, we're really engaging our members to be more connected and more involved in that process, and it starts at the local level, grassroots. That's why you see referendums passing. That's why you see school boards being flipped to more positive and more optimistic kind of school boards. You see that because our members are involved at the grassroots level. It doesn't mean that we're not active at the state level or even at the national level, but we're really focusing on where a difference can be made. Because, in Wisconsin, I just don't think we have a democracy anymore. At the state level.
Explain that.
And, well, as a U.S. social studies teacher, you know, it seems everything is vested in one party and the power is in one hand.
Yes.
And it to me, it just appears that the government for the people, by the people, and of the people no longer exists. I could go to a hearing at the Capitol and we'll have 100 people speaking against a bill and 2 people speaking for it, and it passes without very little discussion. And to me, that's just not democracy.
You are talking about that at the state level in the Capitol. Is it also true of the federal government?
Yeah, I think it's we saw in 2010 a big shift in how things happen, but I think it's more so at the national level, at the federal level. But when the Senate can't do their job and confirm or appoint a new Supreme Court justice, I think we have some problems.
What do you then, as a social studies teacher, then what do you teach about democracy? That right now it's broken?
It's broken. And, you know, we've had different times in American history, so we use this as an opportunity to teach, to have kids watch very closely. This is a time to watch because there are going to be some significant changes. Who knows? Maybe one of the parties will go away. Maybe there will be a new party. You never know. This could be really exciting times as a teacher in U.S. history and social studies.
Are the kids engaged as you talk about the dialogue of our democracy?
Sometimes and sometimes not. Eighth graders, it's a little more challenging because they don't see voting or citizenship. It's too far down the road for them. It's not as tangible. But I do see them becoming more and more engaged, more involved in the conversation. And I think social media has played a huge role in that.
Act 10 made WEAC play defense. Is your union now playing offense? And if so, how? To use a football analogy.
Exactly. I love that.
You're a former coach.
I was. Yeah. High school volleyball, and offense is so much more fun than defense.
Okay.
But you have to have defense. You have to have it in order to be able to play the offense. So we're going to continue our defensive strategies just because that's important. We've got to protect our educators, and we've got to protect our communities and kids. But we're going to move to the offense. We're going to move where we get a chance to work with educators on a day-to-day basis to help promote the profession and just to really live the idea that every kid in this state deserves a quality public education. And we just have to, that's our offense.
Has WEAC encouraged teachers to run for the ledge, the Assembly, and the Senate in this election cycle?
We support some of the groups that are training individuals, and we will recommend individuals, but we haven't done a push on that specifically. I mean, we're getting through some of the other things that are really important to our educators right now. Not that running for public office isn't important, but there are a lot of individuals who are just working through some of the things, some of the changes that are occurring right now in public education.
The changes since 2011. Do you blame the Republicans? Is there any Republican that you as a WEAC president support?
It does no good to blame anyone. I'm not interested in the blaming or the shaming or false apologies, excuses. We have to move forward into a new direction. If we get stuck on the blaming, we're never going to be able to play offense. We're never going to have that opportunity. So I'm just not interested in the blaming. We just have to move our agenda. And any individual, regardless of which side of the aisle they sit on, that wants to be a part of promoting public education, will work with them.
Well, in this political season, does WEAC have the money to be a big player, the player that WEAC was 8-9 years ago?
Oh, absolutely not. We don't have that the kind of membership and the numbers that we had back then. But okay. We still have the bodies who are willing to go out there and do the grassroots work and the efforts locally. So, hopefully that will make a difference also in the statewide elections and the national elections.
Well, let's talk about the state Senate. Is WEAC going to be active in the 18th Senate district, which is open because of the retirement of Senator Gudax? Are you going to try to work against Senator Tiffany in Northeast Wisconsin, Senator Harsdorf in Western Wisconsin, Senator Olson, former chairman of the Senate Ed Committee?
One of the great pivots that we've done as an organization is locally. So each region is going to be able to look and see where do they want to put their resources, what do they want to do, and then we're going to support them in their decisions. So local leaders are going to make that decision and bring that back to us and say, this is what we'd like to do, this is our plan, how will WEAC support us?
Would you like, though, as the president of WE Act, for the Democrats to control Senate District 18 and win the Tiffany seat?
It would be very nice. Well, it will allow for us to play a lot more offense than defense.
Well, explain that. If Democrats won the Senate, and they would have to flip three seats, mm-hmm. What additional hope, or how would that affect the goals of WEAC in the next session?
Well, I think one of the biggest goals is just to bring the respect back to the profession. I mean, we're losing teachers, at an incredible rate, and we have to stop that bleed. And stopping that bleed is not lowering the standards to teaching. Stopping the bleed is not doing all these other silly gimmick things that are out there. It's really bringing back the opportunity for teachers to have a voice in their workplace, for the teachers to be able to give their expertise and their knowledge to being able to make that district a better school district so that the kids get the best education possible. And that's what we really need to work on. So if we can stop some of the silly legislation like lowering the standards to teaching, that is what the Senate can do. They can stop that and we can start moving forward in some of the other areas in teacher respect.
If Democrats won the state Senate, would WEAC push for any type of a rollback of provisions of Act 10, maybe the collective bargaining? I mean, you're so much of a pragmatist, you know you're not going to repeal Act 10, correct?
Right, absolutely.
But what's achievable if Democrats won are in control of the Senate, excuse me.
Yeah, we'd have to really take a look at all of the parts of what Act 10 did and take a look at the collective bargaining parts that we know that perhaps has a chance to be able to make it through the process. And so then we'd have to analyze that and determine what best and how most effective we can be in working with the Senate and other legislators. So it's just really analyzing what's there. Right now I don't have an excellent answer on that because that's down the road, and I don't know exactly what's in that legislation that we should be looking at. This should be the first to be repealed, right. Then this, and then this. Because I know it'll take a long time for us to ever get back that collective bargaining that we've had for so many years.
Do you think you will get it back eventually?
I think eventually it'll come back. I think, Wisconsin taxpayers believe in their public schools, and they're starting to see an erosion. And part of that is because some of the collective bargaining allowed for teachers to have a voice in the workplace, educators to be actively engaged in what the policies were that affect kids and families in that community.
A state assembly member from Western Wisconsin, close to you, added a provision that high school students have to take a civics test to graduate. Good change, bad change?
Well, when I looked at the civics exam, and we always show different parts of the immigration exam, the citizenship exam, and it's somewhat of a silly kind of exam for us to be able to do because we're asking kids to take just factual types of stuff, and we don't teach U.S. history that way anymore. We don't teach just by memorizing the facts of how many stripes are on this flag and what each stripe means, or mm-hmm. can you name five Native American tribes that are federally recognized? But we teach kids how to be able to find that information. That test doesn't allow for that. And it doesn't even allow for kids who are special needs. So there are a lot of things about that exam that are concerning because it was just adopted without really looking at another test. And is it necessary to have another test?
Speaking of testing, one of the legacies of No Child Left Behind is more testing. Mm-hmm. How often do you have to administer tests to your eighth graders?
Well, the eighth graders, when I was teaching eighth grade social studies, the one time, the state WKCE test.
And yes, then we had, which has now gone away.
Gone away, right. And so they will administer whatever test that they've just adopted or be able to purchase. Math and science, I think. Math, science, and language arts, I think, are the three big areas that they're going to be testing. But now with the ESSA, things are going to change, and that's the Every Student Succeeds Act that
yes.
the federal government just passed. Things are going to change, and that's an opportunity for us to work collaboratively with our administration and in our district.
excuse me. I want to ask you about some numbers. I checked with the Fiscal Bureau. State government is spending $5.24 billion on aids to public schools this year, and $157 million in aid to private schools participating in the CHOICE program. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with those numbers?
Well, what's wrong with those numbers is that we know that some of these choice programs, some of these schools that have been established and set up for profit are failing. They're not working. So we're investing money in things that have no accountability. There's no accountability for these individuals who have established these schools to the state or to even the parents. If they can just disappear in the middle of the night, That's pretty, alarming to me as an educator. And so I'm very concerned about that, and I'm concerned that we're trying to fund two education systems in the state of Wisconsin, and we should be just really investing in the one system that we know works. We know works. And if we would invest and continue to invest in that, we could even see some changes that are positive.
What about the premise that choice empowers parents to take their kid out of a failing public school and perhaps do a little better in a private school? Do you buy that premise?
I don't, because there's such an inequity in that. Where I grew up in Minong, the only choice we have really is a virtual online or our public school, K-12 public school. Mm-hmm. And even the virtual online is so hit and miss because we don't get internet always up there in the northern part of the state. It's so slow, and it puts kids at a disadvantage. So throughout the state, we're creating the haves and the have-nots through this kind of system of the choice.
Well, but what should happen to the choice program? Should it be frozen where it is now that it's statewide? Should it be dialed back? Remember, it started just Milwaukee, yep, then Racine. Now we're statewide. You don't support choice.
I don't support choice. And I think what they need to do is they need to freeze where we're at right now, and they need to begin rolling back, taking a look at what we can do to build up our community schools, particularly Milwaukee Public Schools. What can we do to support community schools, and how can we engage parents and community members to be more active and involved in the public schools there?
Well, you mentioned MPS, the school district in Wisconsin's largest city. If you could wave a wand and help MPS, what would you do?
I would properly fund it. Not that money solves everything, but properly fund it so that there's an adequate funding for every child that attends MPS, so that it's equal to their counterparts in the suburbs of Milwaukee. So that's number one. And number two, I'd allow for the community schools to really grow stronger in Milwaukee, because we know that that's working. In the schools that they have a strong community-based program, they have seen difference in not only how the kids are performing, but how parents are feeling about their school.
What about the explosion of charter schools that we've seen in Wisconsin? Good trend or bad trend?
Bad trend again.
Why?
Because it's creating that system of the haves and the have-nots. When you can decide who gets to come into the school, and you can set some parameters on that, but it's not the best way for our kids in Wisconsin. Again, no accountability. I'm so concerned about the lack of accountability. When I hear of the number of schools that close down in the middle of the night, or you have people embezzling money, that's not going to be happening in our public schools, because there's that accountability when there's funding and all that involved. I'm just real concerned about lack of accountability.
The proponents of choice, though, say that those schools that pack up and close in the middle of the night are only a few, and that by and large, choice provides as well. What about those studies that some say choice schools provide a better education, others say not much improvement? How do you feel about
well, we can
assessing
find,
choice schools?
We can find all kinds of studies,
yes,
to find out whatever. I mean, to make our case and to make our argument. But what I'm most concerned about is, while they say, well, it's only affecting a small number, but to those particular kids and to those families, that's devastating, because Alex doesn't have a chance to do second grade over. I mean, that's very dangerous, and we can't use kids as guinea pigs or laboratory rats. And that's what some of these schools are becoming. So to say, like some of the proponents say, well, it's only a few. The few that it does hurt those kids and those families. And then my other argument is we're funding two systems here, so we're taking, from the pre-K-12 throughout the state of Wisconsin to be able to fund for just a select group of individuals. I mean, when we look at what the choice did, like in Eau Claire, those kids were already in the Catholic schools in Eau Claire. They were already there. So it wasn't a choice. The parents had made that choice years before. So I think we're taking away, my grandma used to always say, rob Peter to pay Paul, kind of, and that's what we're kind of doing. We're taking away from the public schools and the money that's needed there.
One lawmaker wants to change the Constitution so that the governor names the superintendent of public instruction. What's your feeling on that?
That's where I say democracy gets lost. It's a balance. I think it's a good balance when education is specifically identified in our state constitution, I think we have to have somebody there who's elected by the people and not appointed, elected by the people, to be able to run an effective and great public education in Wisconsin.
What's at stake in the presidential elections for the future of education? Well, of course, nationally, but in Wisconsin. How do you feel educational programming and funding would change under a President Trump or under a President Clinton?
I think there would be a stark and a huge difference between the two. We see what Hillary has said. She believes in early childhood. She believes in funding early childhood. She believes in our public schools. She believes in funding our public schools. And so I think there's a huge difference in the two. And for us, it's critically important that Hillary be elected president.
What's the other side of that? What do you fear under a President Trump, sir?
Our school system going privatized, so that it's for profit, so that individuals like Trump, who's a businessman, can make more money off kids.
Governor Walker's not up for a couple years yet.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll be presenting the next budget. Do you have a fear that his next budget would hurt public schools? And if so, what are you afraid of?
Well, that's I'm afraid of the more money being siphoned off the public education into the voucher expansion or the, as they call, the choice. So I'm worried about that. I know he is hearing loud and clear that people are saying fund our public schools. If there's referendums being passed throughout the state at the large number that they are being passed, I hope he hears that as an opportunity for him to do the right thing, to fund public education. So my biggest fear is that they're going to just take the money and siphon it off to the voucher, and I'm hoping that they won't do that. I'm hoping that he really listens to the people of Wisconsin and moves a budget forward that funds adequately public schools.
Well, how big of an increase? Would you like to see a 4%, 5%? Again, public school aids this year, according to the Fiscal Bureau, $5.24 billion. Do we need 4, 5, 6%? Have you thought about a number?
I have not thought about a number on that. I do know that the last budgets have significantly hurt. I know some people say, well, yeah, he did increase, but that was the second year and the first year went down. So you have to really look at that number and see what we're doing per pupil. But we also have to take a look at how we fund our schools, because Tony Evers had proposed the fair funding for all,
right.
Which was
the last two cycles,
right.
Budget cycles, he's proposed it's gone nowhere, excuse me.
Right, and I think that that's important. We have to look at that as well, because I don't think we have a fair funding system throughout the state, and so that has to be looked at. So to just increase it, while that will help, we also have to look at the fair funding so that we can make sure that all of our schools get the adequate funding that they need.
Well, okay, we're almost out of time, so tell us again why you decided to run for and be elected president of the state's largest teachers union?
You know, I grew up in a single-parent home. My mom raised four kids on her own up in northern Wisconsin. She kept four jobs until she got really active in her support staff union. And by being able to negotiate a working salary, she was able to eliminate one of her jobs. So she didn't have to bartend, so she could be home with us kids at night. And to me, I saw the value of what the union did. I see that same thing, what we can do when we work with our newest educators, when they come into the profession, how we can support them and give them what they need to be excited about teaching, to be excited about the profession, and to make sure that all of our kids get a great public education in Wisconsin. That's what excites me, and that's why I ran.
Recently, the Public Policy Forum said we don't have future teachers in the pipeline. Is that a big problem for 10, 15 years from now?
It is, and that's one of our emphasis we're going to take on the next 3 years. We're going to take a look at the pipeline to teaching and see what we can do to help support and bring back the kind of respect that's needed in the profession.
Okay. Ron Martin, president of the Wisconsin Education Association Council, as of August 1, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks for talking to Wisconsin Eye.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.